Hi, I'm Francesca, a registered nutritional therapist, and you're listening to another episode of the Empowered Perimenopause podcast. Welcome. My aim is to bring you down-to-earth, conversational episodes that help you develop a deeper understanding of how your body's changing in your 40s, and most importantly, how you can support yourself throughout this wonderful transitional phase of your life. Join me for my solo episodes and also episodes with guests for fun, fresh, truthful chat on all things health and happiness in your 40s. And now onto the episode. Hi, and welcome to another episode of the Empowered Perimenopause podcast with me, your host, Francesca. So in today's episode, I want to talk to you about something I've been meaning to talk about for so many weeks now since I actually started the podcast, and that's histamine and the link between histamine and perimenopause symptoms and our overall experience of perimenopause, because it's something that so many people are unaware of, which is understandable because it isn't really, it's not obvious, it's not talked about a lot, but there is a big link between histamine and how we experience perimenopause in terms of our symptoms. So I want to talk to you about that today, because perimenopause can bring with it this kind of surprising new sensitivity to things, particularly with our skin, allergy-like symptoms, so from rashes and hives to mysterious itching in places that we never knew could itch, like itchy ears. You know, this is something that's really common as we move through our 40s. And this, like I said, this sort of new sensitivity to maybe things that we've been using our whole life, but suddenly we're finding we're coming up in rashes, and, you know, or even certain situations are causing flushing in the face. That's a big one for histamine. And, you know, as I said, like itching, rashes. So often these kind of symptoms, the culprit is histamine. And you've probably heard of histamine in relation to allergies or hay fever like symptoms, but it plays a much bigger role in the body than a lot of people realize, way beyond those typical allergy like symptoms. So let me explain what histamine actually is, and then we'll go into why it becomes a problem, particularly in perimenopause. So histamine is a natural chemical produced in the body. It's a natural sort of chemical messenger. It's released by the immune system. I'll explain more in a minute. It actually helps to regulate our stomach acid, and it acts as a neurotransmitter, which is a brain chemical basically, which means it's a natural chemical in the body that communicates with the brain and the nervous system. So as I said, most commonly, histamine is known for triggering symptoms during allergic reactions. So things like sneezing, itching, watery eyes or hives, because it's released by immune cells known as mast cells. So you may have also heard of, you know, maybe you've heard of histamine intolerance or histamine overload, or maybe you've heard of MCAS, mast cell activation syndrome. So this is, you know, where these terms come from, basically. So histamine is released by immune cells called mast cells, and we'll talk about that more in a minute. But beyond allergies, histamine can also influence your mood, your sleep, your periods, and even your digestion. So there's a whole lot more to it as we move through perimenopause when it comes to what histamine can cause. So, you know, we've all heard of antihistamine medication that we might have used growing up or even now during hay fever season, because those medications are, you know, obviously trying to reduce levels of histamine in the body, which will be causing those typical hay fever symptoms, particularly in hay fever season. But where it gets interesting in perimenopause is that histamine levels tend to rise when estrogen is high. And during the roller coaster of perimenopause, particularly in the earlier stages of perimenopause, so sort of late 30s, early to mid 40s, estrogen is often spiking higher than it's ever been before in our body, so way beyond normal levels. And I've talked about this in previous episodes. We can see in this roller coaster points where estrogen becomes three times higher in the body than it's ever been before. So these spikes of estrogen can lead to more histamine in the body, or make it harder and or make it harder for your body to clear that histamine effectively. And that can mean more symptoms and or an intensity of the current symptoms. So if you're in perimenopause and you're dealing with things like anxiety, insomnia, migraines, rashes, heavier or longer periods or both, and this sort of facial flushing coming out of nowhere, histamine can be playing a role. I definitely experience the facial flushing. It's not, as I always say, perimenopause is evolving all the time. Symptoms are evolving all the time. I'm not actually dealing with, and I've just realized this now, as I say this, I'm not actually dealing with the facial flushing at the moment. I actually think it's been weeks and weeks since I had one. Maybe 4 or 5 weeks, actually, when I think about it. Whereas before that, I'd say it's been a good 6 to 9 months where I'm experiencing this facial flushing at least once a day at certain points in the day. And for me, I know that was a potential histamine issue. Maybe my body has sort of moved past the histamine issues now and I'm not experiencing it anymore. Who knows? But hopefully you'll understand what I'm talking about more so by the time we get to the end of the episode. So where I'm saying that high estrogen levels cause high histamine levels, we have to understand that this roller coaster of perimenopause, because we have these higher levels of estrogen than ever before, because remember, in perimenopause, estrogen goes up before it goes down. Progesterone starts declining more or less as soon as we move into perimenopause. So late 30s, early 40s, progesterone is already starting to decline. Estrogen, on the other hand, is actually going up and up and up before it starts its decline, which happens usually for most women later in their perimenopausal journey. So anywhere from mid, but more so late 40s onwards, the closer they get to having those more, skipping periods and skipping one month, and then eventually you're skipping sort of 3 months, 6 months, until you eventually go 12 months without having a period and you reach menopause. It's in those times when estrogen is actually on its decline. Before that, while periods are still regular, for the most part, it's actually getting higher than it ever was before. And so those kind of really high points during that roller coaster can cause these higher levels of histamine. And when we're talking about the roller coaster, crashing or falling estrogen causes, so those drops, so where we get the high spikes of estrogen in the roller coaster, they're always going to be followed by a drop. Obviously, that's what a roller coaster is. It's highs and lows, up and down, up and down. And those crashing or falling estrogen levels cause what's something we can describe as estrogen withdrawal rather than low estrogen overall. And those estrogen withdrawal points, so those low points in the roller coaster, can cause your typical symptoms that we'd associate with low estrogen, like night sweats, hot flushes, you know, and so on. But actually, it's not that we have overall low levels of estrogen as such. It's the withdrawal points of in the roller coaster when we get those low points. So that is a big driver of the neurological symptoms of perimenopause, the migraines, hot flushes, night sweats, and so on. But as I said, another major driver of these symptoms is high histamine or mast cell activation, as I said, known as MCAS, resulting from those spikes, those very high spikes of estrogen. So it can be a bit of a minefield when you're looking at symptoms, thinking, well, what is it? Is it the roller coaster? Is it the low points of the roller coaster? Is it that I have overall low levels of estrogen already? Is it histamine? You know, so I'm kind of throwing another bit of confusion into the mix, but I really hope that it isn't confusing and I'm sort of helping, if anything, to help you understand a little bit more of what your symptoms could be. So yes, a lot of those neurological symptoms like migraines, hot flushes, night sweats, anxiety, sleep issues, they are likely caused by the roller coaster when we get the low points. But other reasons can also be high histamine or this mast cell activation syndrome from those very high spikes of estrogen. So there can be, you know, a significant overlap between symptoms of perimenopause and then the high histamine or MCAS symptoms. So that just suggests this common sort of underlying process during perimenopause of histamine, high levels of histamine or MCAS, that's kind of underlying a lot of people's symptoms. So some women experience allergy type symptoms from it, like asthma flare-up. So very common in perimenopause to hear women say, you know, I'm developing new allergies, but also things like I'm developing asthma that I've never had before, or I used to have asthma Never had it for many, many years. And now I'm experiencing flare-ups or some wheezing here and there. And that's another thing that I've experienced and I'm not experiencing anymore, as I say, because perimenopause is this ever-evolving phase. So I had asthma as a child. I used an inhaler. And I think from about aged maybe 15, 16, it just completely went away. And I never, ever needed my inhaler again. And I used to call myself somebody who had asthma, even though I never had any symptoms. But then I went and had a full sort of lung function asthma checkup in my 20s and was told, nope, you do not have asthma whatsoever. It was just a childhood thing. But as I've moved into perimenopause, one thing I started to experience maybe 2 or so years ago, so 42, 43, was wheezing. I would just be sitting on the sofa in the evening and just notice that I was wheezing. I wouldn't need an inhaler, but the wheezing would be there. And I think this is so strange. I don't have asthma. That went on for about, I'd say about a year and a half. And it's been about a year now that I've not had that anymore. So this is, as I said, you know, symptoms evolve and evolve and evolve. Whether that will come up again during my time in perimenopause, who knows? But that to me suggests, and I was also getting the facial flushing at that time as well, and the increased anxiety and heart palpitations, another suggestion of histamine, all at the same time. So that does suggest to me that during that particular phase a couple of years ago, I was having issues in my body clearing histamine, or my high spikes of estrogen were causing these high histamine levels. And potentially now the reason I don't get those symptoms is maybe because I'm not getting those massive spikes anymore as I've moved further along in my journey and I'm sort of 45 and a half now. You know, or maybe my body for whatever reason has become more efficient at clearing histamine and I was just going through a sort of phase where I couldn't clear it properly. Who knows? But it's just interesting to sort of see how these symptoms evolve. And, you know, very helpful to understand what it might be. So I knew at the time this is potentially a histamine thing. So some of the stuff I'm going to talk about later on in the episode about how we can manage this situation, I was doing and I did. And that's potentially what's helped me to move through and away from those particular symptoms. So mast cells, then, let's explain what's going on here, are a type of white blood cell that play a role in the immune system and allergic reactions. These mast cells contain little granules that are filled with histamine and other inflammatory sort of immune system substances. And these granules are released during an immune response. And the high estrogen spikes in the perimenopause roller coaster can basically trigger these mast cells to degranulate, so break their granules break down, which releases histamine into the system, leading to increased histamine levels and therefore symptoms of high histamine and/or mast cell activation syndrome, which include hives or a sort of nettle rash, which is known as urticaria. And that nettle rash would cause itchy, raised red or white welts on the skin. It could be hay fever-like symptoms, as I mentioned, maybe some itching, like itchy nose, itchy throat, itchy ears, and also nasal congestion. It could be fluid retention that we get, you know, that sort of menstrual bloating around the body. Tinnitus or ringing in the ears can be quite common as well. Anxiety, agitation, heart palpitations, insomnia, so just essentially waking up all through the night or not being able to fall asleep, not being able to fall back to sleep when you wake up, headaches, but particularly migraines. Migraines are very characteristic of histamine, breast tenderness, breast swelling, brain fog, trouble concentrating, trouble focusing, joint aches and pains, and the vasomotor symptoms, which are, of course, hot flushes and night sweating. And particularly when it comes to hot flushes, it's, as I've mentioned, it's that facial flushing, that sort of just, you know, your face, just your cheeks just go red and burn. That's very, that can be a symptom of high histamine. And as I said, that's what I was dealing with. So as you can see here, the symptoms of high histamine, they're quite similar to typical symptoms of perimenopause. So, you know, this is where it can be unclear, you know, the massive overlap, you just don't know. So as I said, for me, I had this group of symptoms, this particular group of symptoms that were very much histamine related. And so I sort of thought, well, it's very likely that there's a histamine issue going on for me right now. And like I said, at that time, I was probably experiencing very high estrogen that I'm potentially not experiencing as much now at 45 and a half compared to when I was 42, 43. And potentially for whatever reason, particularly gut health is a big reason for this. Maybe I was having issues clearing it efficiently and it was just too high for my body, or, you know, my body was just, it was just too high for my body to be able to clear efficiently. So I had those set of symptoms. And now that my estrogen has come down, or maybe it's just not, it's not necessarily on a massive low, but it's just not spiking as high as it was then, I'm not experiencing those symptoms. That's my assumption of the situation. So of course, high histamine is not only the only cause of those symptoms, but it is just one cause and a fairly easy one to address if you're aware of it. So I'll talk about ways to reduce and support histamine and relieve symptoms in a minute. But before we get to the solutions, let me just give you some more background on all of this. So as I mentioned, histamine is a brain chemical, a neurotransmitter, and it's a stimulatory brain chemical. So that's why high histamine can cause these neurological symptoms, which refers to anything related to the nervous system, so the brain, spinal cord, and nerves, such as, you know, the symptoms I've been mentioning. Because histamine is not only an immune or inflammatory substance, it's also a stimulating brain chemical. It promotes alertness, it promotes wakefulness. So it's that stimulant effect. And that's why antihistamines often have this sedating effect. Okay, so how does estrogen increase histamine? Let's have a look. So the first way is through what's known as mast cell activation. So estrogen activates the mast cells in the immune system, which prompts them to release their stored histamine. So remember I said they store histamine in their little granules. So it prompts them to degranulate and release that histamine. And also something called heparin, which is a blood thinner. So this, you might have heard of this in a medication form, but we also naturally make some in the body. And this release of heparin alongside the histamine is why mast cell activation, high histamine, can cause heavier and also longer periods, longer bleeds. The second way that estrogen increases histamine is through increased enzyme expression, a particular enzyme known as histidine decarboxylase. You don't need to remember the names, but this is just one of the ways. It boosts the expression of this particular enzyme, which is an enzyme that converts the amino acid histidine into histamine. And the third way that estrogen increases histamine in the body is through another enzyme known as the DAO enzyme. It stands for diamine oxidase. You just need to know it as DAO. It's very common. If you were to Google it, you'd see supplements called DAO. So this DAO enzyme basically helps to break down and clear out excess histamine in the body. It does it through the gut and therefore relieve symptoms. But estrogen, high estrogen, will sort of downregulate the activity of this DAO enzyme. And therefore, this DAO enzyme isn't doing its job anymore. And we're not efficiently breaking down and clearing out that excess histamine, which happens in the gut. And also what's happening in the other direction, so we get this sort of vicious cycle, is that estrogen increases histamine, but histamine stimulates the ovaries to make more estrogen. So we get this vicious cycle of estrogen stimulating your mast cells and causing high histamine, and then high histamine causing high estrogen, and then high estrogen causing even more histamine, and so on and so on. So it can sound quite daunting and like, oh my goodness, how, you know, while estrogen is very high, then how am I going to stop this vicious cycle from happening? But the good news is there is a lot we can do to support our body. One of the biggest things is to support our gut health, because another avenue for this high histamine and MCAS is intestinal permeability. So this is where I've talked about this on previous episodes. It's also known as leaky gut. This is where the cells in the lining of the intestine, the intestinal lining, become further. They don't become as tightly packed together. That becomes looser. So we get these sort of gaps in the intestinal lining and the gut lining, known as, which is where the term leaky gut comes from. And there's mast cells in the intestinal lining, and when that lining becomes leaky, those mast cells, again, they degranulate and they release their contents, most of which is histamine. So that's yet another reason why addressing and supporting gut health before and during perimenopause is so important. Also, that DAO enzyme, as I said, it works in the gut. So any sort of gut imbalances alongside that leaky gut situation, gut microbiome imbalances, issues with digestion, not chewing properly, not enough stomach acid, all of these situations can create a situation where the gut just cannot break down and clear out estrogen as efficiently because it's just not working efficiently overall. And that, you know, clearing out histamine is one of its jobs. So the other thing as well is the impact of declining progesterone. So progesterone helps keep histamine levels in check by stabilizing mast cells and upregulating that DAO enzyme. So helping that DAO enzyme to work efficiently, which breaks down and clears out your histamine. And so as progesterone levels start to decline in that early perimenopause onwards, we lose its antihistamine benefits. And one thing to note when it comes to progesterone is that the progestins that we find in contraceptive medications, like the pill, the implant, the injection, that's progestins. That's not progesterone. So that's not the same as the progesterone that we naturally make in our body. It's a synthetic form of progesterone, and it doesn't have the same beneficial antihistamine effect as the real thing that we make in our bodies. And the body identical form of progesterone that we might use in hormone therapy, menopause hormone therapy, which is the most used form of progesterone therapy today, which is great. That is body identical, meaning it's made identically exactly the same as the natural progesterone we make in our body. So that form of progesterone taken orally is actually going to have the same beneficial antihistamine effect. But the progestins found in the contraceptive pill implant injection isn't the same. And also the one found in the Myrina coil. So just to put that out there. Okay, so what are some of the ways that you can reduce or support histamine and relieve your symptoms? So the first things I'm going to go through are definitely to be aware of the foods and drinks that you regularly consume that contain histamine or increase histamine in the body. So these are things like wine, so particularly red wine, but all wine. Really, really sorry to say that, but it's such a high histamine drink that if we are having any issues with histamine clearance, it's definitely one that you want to cut back on. So I actually stopped drinking alcohol just after when I turned 40. I didn't stop completely, I just reduced it. I was kind of, when I say reduced it, I reduced it significantly. I was kind of having one drink every sort of 6 to 9 months. I've now just got myself to a point where I actually don't like alcohol at all. And I haven't had an alcoholic drink or sip of an alcoholic drink for probably 3 or 4 years. But what was happening for me when I was going through that stage where I was having the asthma, I was noticing the wheezing and I was having the flushing in the face and the anxiety and the palpitations in my chest, is if I was to ever have a sip of red wine, which is something that we would have, like, say, with, like, you know, Sunday dinner, that flushing in my face and my asthma really exacerbated within minutes of me just having a couple of sips of red wine. So I knew this for me is definitely a histamine issue. So for me, like I said, you know, I was lucky I didn't have to worry about giving up wine because I didn't like it anyway. And I was just having a couple of sips here and there. And it was just really helping to help me identify where my symptoms were coming from. But yeah, if you are experiencing these symptoms and from listening to this, you're thinking, yeah, they sound histamine related, and you're drinking, quite a bit of wine, it is something quite often, it is something you could consider, even for now, while estrogen is higher in your body, just consider, you know, keeping wine to an absolute minimum. Also, some cheeses, particularly matured aged cheeses, hard cheeses, processed cheese, that blue or moldy cheese, these can really stimulate histamine in the body. Fermented foods, which are really good for us, like sauerkraut, kimchi, sourdough bread. But unfortunately, fermented foods can increase histamine in the body. So me personally, when I knew I was in that high histamine phase, I stopped having anything. I used to really enjoy sauerkraut and kimchi, but I just stopped, and sourdough as well. So I could probably start to reintroduce them now because I'm not experiencing any histamine issues at all, but I just got used to not eating them. So although they're really great for us and they contain lots of lovely live bacteria for gut health, if we're dealing with high histamine, they're just not helpful. Yeast as well. So, you know, anything with with bread, basically anything that contains yeast, and then cured and smoked meats and fish. So unfortunately, things like smoked salmon, which again, really handy, really good for you. I had to cut down on that. I now eat smoked salmon all the time, but at the time I couldn't. So you also want to identify potential food sensitivities, particularly to A1 cow's dairy. So A1 is the sort of protein found in cow's milk specifically, so not in sheep's or goats, which is A2, which is much more easily digested by the body and less, you know, less likely to cause any food sensitivity. But A1 cow's dairy, so your milks, your yogurts made from cow's milk, particularly, so milk and yogurt would be the biggest culprits. They can activate mast cells and release histamine. So maybe thinking about cutting down any cow's dairy that you might be having. You want to support methylation. So methylation is an important biological process in the body. We don't need to go into what that is, but it's something that's very important. It's going on all the time in the body. And we want to support that process because it helps to break down histamine. We want to support it with things like B vitamins, particularly B6, folate, B12. We want to use things like choline. Choline is rich in egg yolks, for example, and something known as SAMe, SAM-E. We can get this in supplement form, but be really careful with supplementing things like SAMe. It can be very powerful and effective, but you do need to know what you're doing with it in terms of dosage and what you're taking it alongside and whether you are a good candidate for this particular nutrient. So with these kind of supplements, SAMe, methionine, those kind of things, I really would prefer that someone was working one-to-one with a nutritional therapist like myself or similar to make sure that it's something that you need and that you'll actually benefit from. So that those B vitamins, choline, for example, they promote that proper breakdown of histamine via this other very important enzyme called histamine N-methyltransferase, HNMT. The reason I'm telling you that is because you might also see some supplements, if you were going to do any Google researching into supplements for histamine, you might see a supplement called HNMT. So it's that enzyme. And you may also see one called the DAO enzyme that I mentioned earlier. But again, working with a practitioner one-on-one would be best with these particular types of supplements. Next is to be supporting gut health. Obviously, I've talked about why that's so important, but it's really, really important to address any underlying potential intestinal permeability. That's that leaky gut. I've got a whole episode on that previously. Or SIBO, so small intestinal bacterial overgrowth, because that can exacerbate this mast cell activation and, of course, histamine release. You could consider using natural antihistamine supplements like quercetin, which helps to stabilize mast cells. And B6, as I mentioned, is a particularly good B vitamin because B6 helps to increase the activity of that DAO enzyme. That's the one that helps to break down and clear out your histamine from the gut. But with B6, it's important not to go over sort of 30 to maximum 50 milligrams of B6 a day. So make sure if you're going to be supplementing separately with B6, that you're making sure you don't have another B complex or a multivitamin that also has B6 and that could take you above that 30 to 50 milligrams a day. You could consider short-term use of antihistamine medication, which can be a really helpful way to determine if your symptoms are caused by histamine or not. So for example, if you're experiencing lots of allergy-like symptoms, maybe some itching or rash or hives, asthma, new asthma or exacerbation of asthma, the flushing in the face, migraines, anxiety, palpitations, heart palpitations. If you're experiencing those symptoms, some or all of them, and you want to know, is it histamine or not? If your symptoms are relieved by short-term use of antihistamine medication, then you know it's histamine. Once you know that, you only want to use that antihistamine medication short-term. Long-term use can cause problems. Whilst you've then, you know, figured out, yes, this is histamine, then you could potentially just continue using them very, very short-term whilst you start to address or sort of implement these other things that I'm talking about today. You could, if you're a good candidate for progesterone therapy, you could speak to your doctor about starting body identical progesterone. So that's known as micronized progesterone. It comes in a capsule. Can not only help to balance out high estrogen, something, you know, really, really helpful during perimenopause, but also relieve histamine symptoms because it acts as that naturally that natural antihistamine, as I mentioned earlier. And something that is so, so key And I've left it till last because it's just so important. And if you're not doing this, the other things will only have a small effect, is supporting your nervous system. Supporting your nervous system is as important as managing hormone levels and everything else I've mentioned here, if not more important. For some people, nervous system support can be the one thing that relieves their symptoms altogether without doing anything else. No supplements, no food changes. When they address nervous system imbalances, you know, dysregulation, and they start to support themselves, their symptoms can just disappear. So techniques and practices that basically promote calm in the brain and the body and reduce stress, things like breath work, really simple practices like the 4-6 ratio breathing, which I talk about all the time because it's so simple, even just for 5 minutes, a couple of times a day, can be really, really supportive. Yoga nidra meditations, body scan meditations, gratitude, whether you're journaling your gratitude or thinking it or saying it out loud, talking about it with a loved one at the end of the day. Gentle mindful yoga, qigong, tai chi, mindful time in nature, and simply ensuring like a better balance of work, rest and play every day. These things can significantly help MCAS symptoms and reduce that sort of histamine flares. So all of these things help to shift the body basically away from that fight flight nervous system state. And that can really, that fight flight nervous system state really heightens histamine release and inflammatory responses and intensifies all of our symptoms. So I talk about this all the time. You know, I've got plenty of previous episodes on nervous system support, stress management, just ways to manage cortisol, which is essentially released in that fight flight state and causing, you know, potentially increases in histamine. So do go back and listen to previous episodes where I've talked about stress management. Nervous system support is one of my 4 key pillars in my work that I do with one-to-one clients, and also inside my Midlife Thrive program, my membership. There's 4 key pillars that we work through initially, and then we get to the other stuff, the kind of hormone, the estrogen metabolism stuff, the gut health, the thyroid, all of the extra layers that we need to go into. But firstly, it's those 4 key pillars. It's blood sugar balance and nourishment. It is sleep and circadian rhythm. It's stress management and nervous system regulation. And it is exercise and movement that nourishes your body and your hormones. So those are the 4 key pillars. So do go back and listen to previous episodes where I have talked about those, particularly the stress management one. And I hope this has been helpful. I hope it hasn't been too overwhelming or made you feel in any way confused. If it has, please drop me a line. I would love to hear from you. If you've got any questions, any confusions, anything you want clarity on, please do drop me an email. You can email me at francesca@francescaliparotti.com. You'll also find that in the show notes. You can drop me a DM on Instagram, however you'd like to contact me. Do. And if you've got any personal questions that you would like me to address on future podcast episodes, obviously anonymously, drop me those questions. I would love to hear them and I'd love to address them for you. And if you'd like to book a discovery call with me to talk about how I can help you in one of my packages, one-to-one, you can click the link in the show notes or head over to my website homepage, francescaliparotti.com, and you'll find a link to book your discovery call there, which is free, of course. So thank you for listening and I'll see you next time. Bye-bye. If you found this episode helpful, then please share it with anyone else who you think could benefit. And consider leaving a rating and a review, as this will help the podcast to reach and help more people. And if you need more guidance on your own health journey, you can grab my free guide, 6 Steps to Mastering Your Hormones in Your 40s, over at francescaliparotti.com, where you can sign up for your free copy. Or you'll also find the link in the show notes.